Welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about JLA Year One, part of the Defending the Post-Crisis series that we're doing. You, of course, know my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Hello, everybody.
And also with us is Kitty Hawk.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. And as always, we are first going to go through the solicitations, see if there's anything worth picking up. Okay, Sonic the Hedgehog Archives. No.
RG Double Digest 248. All right. The low price of $3.99.
Oh, that reminds me. Kitty Hawk, Gisella Gossi just announced that they're selling posters of the alternate cover of her issue of Archie.
Woohoo! All right.
So if you want to pick that up, it's available.
I think. Might be on the list of getting things. But yes, I'm excited for Archie Double Digest 248.
Okay. Let's keep on going.
Still
here.
Going. Yeah.
Still not reading Aspen Comics. Skipping Avatar Comics. Skipping Big Dog. Skipping
Warhammer! Bongo. Still going.
Okay. There's some Adventure Time comics. I haven't ever read these. Kitty Hawk?
I've read, a couple of the Adventure Time comics, and it's, I guess the way to put it is there's some cool... It's like Adventure Time if it was in a comic book, except I think Adventure Time's charm, for me at least, just comes from the animation. So,
okay. So, yeah. Not... So,
but I've heard they're really... So.
They're good comics. I mean, they read, episodes in between episodes sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, if you want more Adventure Time and you want it official, there you go.
Yeah.
Bravest Warriors, on the other hand, I have not been able to get into that.
Let's see.
Yeah. I mean, I love Catbug, but I just can't like Bravest Warriors.
That's okay.
It's a decent Garfield concept, but it's just... They have a Garfield ongoing? What?
Yeah. Yeah, and Natasha Legri of Being Puppy Cat is doing the variant cover.
Now that is weird looking.
Let me click this. Come on, come on, come on. Why are you being slow?
That's a little creepy.
Yep.
That's so adorable and Japanese. That I like that. I like that. That's fine. I'm fine with that.
All right, so let's see here. We're walking. Okay. We got, let's skip Dark Horse. We're at DC. Nothing really interesting at DC. All I know about what's...
Scribblenauts, unmasked variant cover of Aquaman 27. You can't see it, though. Damn it.
But the funny thing about it is I do peek around scans daily occasionally, and it turns out in one of the latest issues of the new Superman reboot, Superman lets Parasite absorb some of Lois Lane because she recently found out that Superman's Clark Kent, that way she could forget.
Moving stuff on my desk, taking off glasses, banging head against desk.
Yeah, the only thing I see in DC from this week is the Earth 2 annual, because I've been reading that, Robinson's not writing it anymore, but there's still... I like alternate universe takes on established characters, and this one's got the origin of the new Earth 2 Batman. Because apparently, in the storyline of Earth 2, around the time that Darkseid, 5 years ago, when all the heroes started popping out all over the place in, Earth 1, over on Earth 2, Darkseid invaded and pretty well took over the planet until... his network of fire pits and boom tubes and all that were destroyed by the sacrifice of that world's Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And then recently in the Earth 2 title, Batman was revealed to have survived, and it's like the two-parter that ended Superman the Animated Series, where he's been, basically, I wouldn't say possessed by Darkseid, but he's been turned evil. And he's got the sweet black and red armor, and he's for Darkseid and all that. And then Batman comes back and he's half a ghost or something, no one knows. He's been around for a while, no one knows what his deal is, and finally we're getting that explanation. So, but yeah, other than that, I keep forgetting that there's Forever Evil tie-in miniseries that I just don't care about.
Yeah, Forever Evil. Like I said, it sounds like a freaking Power Rangers special. But the one thing that I do have to say that is somewhat interesting, again, from diving into Scans Daily, is apparently Batman is doing a Year Zero kind of storyline right now.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's actually revealed that there's this whole story behind James Gordon's trench coat.
What? I haven't. Yeah, it's.
Let me tell the story.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's
25
kinda...
of The Simpsons.
Well, what happened was a young Bruce Wayne, like the day before his parents were killed, was playing truant, and Jim Gordon happens to be the cop that picked him up and is taking him back to school. And while him and his partner, Detective Harrigan, yes, that one, JT. Are driving around, and they're making lots of stops on their drive. Lots of stops, and they keep on picking up things. And one of the things they picked up was this beautiful, wonderful trench coat, which is James Gordon's trench coat. And it turns out that this was one of the many things that, James Gordon back in those days was a pickup boy for the corrupt cops. And the trench coat was one of these, you know, favors slash gifts. Bruce Wayne, you know, in his early 20s, in a hospital after being attacked by a supervillain, I forget which one, it's not important, is being questioned by James Gordon, is handcuffed to his hospital bed. Bruce Wayne breaks the handcuff and tells the story about the trench coat, about that's why he can't trust any cop because James Gordon's dirty as much as the rest of them. He actually takes the gun from James Gordon, says the only other thing I remember from that night was this view, and points the gun at Gordon's head.
Wow.
Damn.
Okay, I am tired of this everyone is related to everyone bullshit that keeps happening, because that is just... That is just, what the fuck? That's not a good Batman story. That's just like...
Makes about as much sense as his last remaining relative being part of the Red Hood gang.
Yeah. I mean, like, what is that? Like, okay, James Gordon is a corrupt cop. No, James Gordon is purity. He's, like, supposed to be... He trusts Batman because he's, like... Oh, anyway.
But what's your feelings on this reveal, JT?
I'm right there with Kitty Hawk. All this interconnectivity is going to bring down the new 52 one way or another.
Everyone went to high school with each other.
Actually,
oh no, that's going to be covered in the TV series.
Yes, Gotham High.
Gotham. It was originally... I was on board with that series when they said it was going to be focusing on James Gordon and going from, like, the murder of Thomas and Martha Wayne forward to the debut of Batman. I was like, yes, I want to see that story. I want to see what happened to Gordon in those intervening years. And now they're turning it into Fox's Smallville.
It wasn't Fox's, it was the CW's Smallville.
Yeah. If you can listen carefully, folks, Kitty Hawk's brain is grinding to a complete halt.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Dynamite.
Yeah, let's not talk.
Okay, we have Army of Darkness versus Hack Slash, which I've never heard of Hack Slash, so...
It's a comic book created by Tim Seeley, who does the A cover. It's basically, the plot of the story is what the one girl that survives a slasher flick, Cassie Hack, goes on to become the slasher of slashers. Like, her mother killed a bunch of kids in school, killed herself by throwing her head into a boiling pot of gravy, then rising from the grave to continue her mission of chopping up the kids that were mean to her daughter. So Cassie takes her out and goes around hunting down all these Freddies and Jasons and Michael Myers that are all over.
She's like horror movie Batman.
Basically. I mean, over time, the story evolves naturally, that you find out there's an origin, a common ancestral origin for all the slashers, which actually makes kind of sense in a way. And in this one, this takes place after the series is over now. Like, it ended a couple years ago, and this is Cassie hooks up with Ashley Williams, and they
love
find
it.
out, Yeah, it's gold, is what I'm saying.
That's all you have to say. Brilliant. But let's move down here. Little Sonya, you know what? Once you take the sexy out of Red Sonya, fail.
That's, yeah, I can't say. I like the idea of the little Dynamite Kids, like, covers. Like, I like alt covers. You know, that was a cool idea they did a couple of months ago through some of the Dynamite titles, but the fact that they're actually doing, like, specials and one-shots like this is like, no.
So here's a question for you. I always heard that Shauna was the She-Devil, but it also says Red Sonya's She-Devil. Who is the true She-Devil?
Well, they're both She-Devils in their own right. I think who came out first in comic form? Was it Shauna or Sonya?
Red Sonya came out first, you know what? I've always loved the title Shauna She-Devil. You know, it's such a classic title. Anyone remember it?
I know of the character. I don't think I've ever actually read the
comics. Jungle Girl? Okay, anyways. So Shadow is doing a year one now because we need to see Shadow Begins.
Oddly enough, the year ones that they've done through the Dynamite comics haven't been that bad. I mean, the Green Hornet year one by Mark Waid was very good.
Is that the one with the female Kano?
No, that was the Kevin Smith Green Hornet that... I ranted on that a couple episodes back, Ben. I'd rather not go back in the hole.
I know. I was just pressing your buttons.
Yeah.
But why does a Shadow need a year one? I mean, he's not that complex.
Well, it's kind of like the first Highlander movie. You don't need to have it explained. Just accept the mystery and go forth, good sir, you know? I mean, Green Hornet, sure, that's
isn't
a little
that the
more...
whole point behind the Shadow doing it?
Yeah,
Green Hornet makes sense because, like, there is like a backstory we know that, like, you know, but like Shadow is sort of a mystery thing. It's more of an thing about an organization, and if you explain it, it sort of loses its like mystery.
Well, yeah, that's like Highlander too. You did not need to explain their abilities. Just there are these random dudes throughout history who die, come back from the dead, fight until there's one left, and why not? Like, why do you got to take all the magic and mystery out of something? I mean, it's like explaining the goddamn
because
force.
That cow ain't gonna milk itself. I mean, you gotta keep milking it. I mean, okay, what haven't we done with this character yet? That's what happens. Even though, like, the Shadow is, like, one of those characters, like, where it's like, I'm sorry, but you can make any story you want. That's the point. Anyway.
So, let's move on. We got IDW, and oh my goodness, they have a gender flip Kirk and Spock in the Star Trek number 29.
Yes. Was it Tiberia Kirk?
Jane Kirk.
Jane Tiberia Kirk. Isn't it? Or Tiberia? Oh, it's still Tiberius. Okay.
I don't know. I just think it was really funny that we have Kid Yak on this episode and this is what they're doing with Star Trek.
That is hilarious.
Wait. Have they done the Mirror Mirror in this Star Trek
universe? This is their version of Mirror Mirror.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
sweet
all
Lord.
Right. I'm okay with this.
I haven't really read this Star Trek title. See, the one that came out this week in IDW that I'm hyped for is Godzilla Rulers of Earth. Like, this is seriously, it's each subsequent Godzilla series since the IDW picked up the license has kind of built on the previous series and going forward with their storyline. So to the point now in this series, it's like 6 years from or 5 or 6 years from the original emergence of all these monsters, and humanity has kind of learned to live with the kaiju. And now there's aliens trying to, you know, setting things up to try and take over the world. And they're kind of building towards like a destroy all monsters storyline, which is one of my all time favorite Godzilla movies.
Yeah, that one's excellent.
It's let's face it, there's nothing like a steel cage match involving Daikaiju. And it's not Godzilla Final Wars. They had early in this series, they had an appearance by Zilla, or the Matthew Roderick lizard.
Because they took the god out of Godzilla.
Well, and the way they name it Zilla in this is like these soldiers are trying to talk to each other over microphones and or walkie-talkies, and they keep breaking up. So it's like, Zilla, Zilla, Zilla? Seriously? That's what we're calling it? Okay. So it's not like Godzilla Final Wars where Godzilla, you know, basically bitch slaps the pretender into the Sydney Opera House and then blows it the fuck up. Pardon my French.
The pretender in about 8 seconds.
I love that it's also CG just to make fun of it.
It was the only CG fight in that movie.
There was a couple of shots of like the rebuilt Gigan, but
it was mostly the joke. It was the joke of ha ha.
Yeah,
we're better.
So let's move on. Don't really see anything in Image that I want to talk about today.
Cyberforce came back. What the hell?
Cyberforce.
I love that comic. I mean, growing up in the 90s, I loved it because it was basically X-Men with cyborgs. So
I do not like this cover. I do not want. Okay, moving on.
No wants. Invincible.
I stopped reading Invincible a while ago. So let's look at Marvel Comics here. We have
there's one thing. Super Dinosaur finally came out. It's only 4 months late, but hallelujah.
Super Dinosaur.
It's a kid with a 12-foot-tall talking T-Rex who's his best buddy, and they fight super bad science together. It's written by Robert.
Sounds
Kirk,
okay.
So.
Yeah.
Where's the cartoon? Damn it.
So let's see here. We are on Marvel Comics here. We got a movie tie-in for the crappy new Amazing Spider-Man. We got
it's only like 2 years late.
Yeah.
We got you can read in all its glory how Peter Parker helped the person kill his uncle. You could also let's see here. We got
God.
You got Avengers Assemble. You got Guardians of the Galaxy, which is becoming bigger and bigger. They're re-releasing.
Coming out.
They're re-releasing Miracle Man.
Night of the Living
Dead.
Yeah,
like I was looking at Miracle Man. I was like, wait a minute, that's the original, isn't it? I've read that anyway.
If you ever play the Marvel versus Capcom 3.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever play it and you use She-Hulk to fight Deadpool, she would say, you know, 10 years ago, I'd be the one whacking you with the health bar. Which we know is true because 10 years ago, She-Hulk's big thing was breaking the fourth wall. And
that was the best. That was the best.
I got
She-Hulk
new...
and Deadpool could team up.
Nah, it would never work. She you know, he'd be on her all the time, and she'd be beating him up all. Actually, that would be very entertaining.
That'd be fun. Come on, let's do it.
That would be entertaining. Yes. So let's move on. We have
Superior Spider-Man. That's
another issue where everyone in the Marvel Universe is dumb as retard rocks. It's like, there's something wrong with Spider-Man, the Avengers ghost. And they're like, okay, we're bringing him in. We're going to stop him. We're going to figure out what's wrong with him. And he's like, oh, well, I quit the Avengers. And it's like, oh, well, he's not a member of us anymore. He can just go and be evil. We don't care. He's not a member anymore. Really?
Yeah, and then he marches across town, tries to hijack the Mighty Avengers
really
initiative with Luke Cage.
Yeah, I'm going to make my own Avengers with Blackjack and hookers.
You know what? Forget the Avengers.
It's like, this is like the only problem I have with this whole Superior storyline is the fact that everyone else in the Marvel Universe has to be super fucking dumb to let this go on as long as it had.
Nah. Well,
Spider-Man did make a deal with the devil that had unintended consequences.
And technically, Mary Jane made the deal, not Peter Parker. But
he made the deal first. Mary Jane amended it.
Anyways, let's move on. We got
Thunderbolts. I just love this series. I've been reading Thunderbolts since the first issue back in the 90s when it was like Zemo and the Masters of Evil. And now it's Red Hulk, Red Leader, Punisher with a red skull, Venom with a red design, Elektra, and Deadpool. And they
all
just
the red villains.
Basically, they just go around killing people. And with this issue, the new member of the team is Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider.
Well, the big thing about Thunderbolts is basically Marvel Suicide Squad. That's the easiest way to explain it to someone who's not.
Yeah.
It basically is a bunch of villains that are forced to work for the government. It's like
the last volume was. This one is something else entirely now. But
well, let's continue on. We got let's see here. We got moving past Marvel. We got Oni Press. We got Sublime. Viz Entertainment with manga we've already read on their site for free. We got okay. Let's just call that the end of the solicitations then.
Yeah.
All right. So when we come back, we'll come back with the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds
good. Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian has superhero antics and sexy girls. Catch updates weekly at DeCian.com and NoSuperPants.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back with the topic of the show, JLA Year One by Mark Wade. Let's start with this. This is, again, part of the post-crisis continuity, not published around the same time as the actual Year One's, you know, with the Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman reboots. This is published much later, but this tells the story of the founding of the JLA in the post-crisis continuity, and, you know,
fills in a lot of cracks.
Fills in a lot of cracks, and also any writer that actually remembers that the Challengers of the Unknown and the Doom Patrol actually exists gets a thumbs up in my book.
What about Cave Carson and the Sea Devils?
Okay, them guys too. But let's move on and let's talk about this version of the Justice League. Imagine the Justice League without the Trinity, without Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. Imagine a story
like
of
Disney without Mickey Mouse.
Well, there was a Disney without Mickey Mouse.
It's a Disney without Donald.
But, I know, that's what I'm saying.
But
yes.
But still, at the same time, this is still a very great story because it tells the story of, you know, these versions of these heroes. And the story starts with a team of the Justice League being Martian Manhunter, Green Lantern, The Flash, Black Canary, and Aquaman. And and really it is kind of like, you know, this is definitely the beginning of those inklings of I can't believe it's not Justice League. Not exactly in tone, but in everything else, it starts going in that direction. But
you see that they're people before they're superheroes.
Yeah, and the story starts with these five heroes. Each one individually stops a specific weird kind of alien in their own territories, you know, and they decide, well, let's have a team up. Well, not quite like that, but. You know, it's also really interesting looking at their personal lives. Well, I like how Barry Allen, how you get to see how Barry Allen lived back then. You know, he's a forensic analyst and he's utterly bored.
Still alive.
Yeah.
Because this is like, what, not a year or so after they all pretty much debuted as heroes.
Yeah.
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 You should mention, like, written by Mark Wade and art by Barry Kitson. I love that page 8 in the first issue where Barry's looking at this bullet he's got to analyze, and Kitson's just got this oy vey look in his art.
Yeah.
Because Barry is just, like you said, he's bored with, you know, nothing moves as fast as he does, so.
Yep, and he could stop the bullet in midair with his eyes and looks at it and goes like, yeah, the group patterns are exactly the same. Another crime solved. Yep.
And like, he keeps getting fussed at because he can get his work done. Why do you have a clean desk? And it's like, well, I'm better than everyone else.
Yeah.
And one of the stories I really enjoy is definitely the one with a black canary. You have Dinah with her mother, and her mother, the original black canary, and you get this sense that she really doesn't like the fact that it seems like all the men in her life would rather talk about black canary than herself, you know?
Yeah, I get that. And also, like, you know, she doesn't want to be her mother, but she kind of is.
Like, her mom knows that she's out there and all that. I still like how the guys, they're just having this complete conversation and completely ignoring her. She's like, this goes in the back, guys.
Yep.
And then they're just like, oh, and that body, don't get me started.
Now, I'm not really, you know, 100% on the backstory of Black Canary, but is this like a typical, like, backstory behind her? Because
the original Black Canary was a member of the Justice Society, and when they did the reboot, they decided to keep that aspect of the Black Canary storyline going, but just made it that she had a daughter that will be the new Black Canary.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because, like, this is... Yeah, I guess there's that, and also that would have worked its way into Watchmen or the other way around, because it sort of reminds me of Miss Jupiter.
That's extremely close. Yeah. But
is the pre-crisis.
Yeah, that's what I kept
canary.
Thinking the whole time. I was like, yeah.
But another thing that's really enjoyable about this is, you know, she's not exactly, you know, even as a brunette, Black Canary isn't really, you know, she's still hot. And, you know, yeah, she's wearing an oversized sweater, but at the same time, it's like, you know, You're really not gonna, like, you know, talk to her, guys? Really? Wow, it's
that sort of thing was kind of overplayed in my opinion. Like, they kept, like, trying to bring in the whole, well, they, you know, they objectify her and everyone objectifies her, and I guess that was sort of like the whole that's how she's an outcast in society thing. But it kind of got, I don't know, to me it was kind of grating because it was like put in your face a lot. So it just sort of felt like, okay, yeah, I understand. She has problems with this. And then, like, the mother thing just sort of like, okay, she doesn't want to be her mother, but she's Black Canary. I don't know.
I think she gets more comfortable as the story goes on, especially...
oh, yeah, definitely.
And because she decides she's going to be Black Canary, but she's going to be her Black Canary. And I think that that's the big thing that really helps with her storyline.
Yeah, I guess I don't know, like, I read this and I understood that they were trying to go for this, like, outcast sort of thing, like, with, you know, John, basically he's an alien on this world. But it got kind of ridiculous because, like, okay, Aquaman is my biggest problem with this entire run, because okay, Aquaman is already a worthless little, you know, what's Aquaman there for? But, like, making him, like, he can't remember, and, you know, he's never really met anyone like him. He was raised by a father. We don't really know much about that. He's been swimming around talking to fish, and he has a strange accent, but that's not really conveyed very well through the dialogue. And the questions become things like, why has he got this suit? Did his father dress him up like this? And, you know,
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, talking underwater, you don't talk as loud. Okay, dude, who are you talking to underwater if you're the only one like yourself? So I guess, like, I don't know. The entire time I'm just reading this, and, like, Aquaman is just like, I mean, he's great because I like the bits with him in Martian Manhunter, but at the same time I'm thinking, this just does not work. Aquaman is just so worthless here. In fact, it's like, well, it's actually compounded when he fights the villain, the Brain, and the Brain steals the body parts from all the other characters,
except
but nothing
for
from Aquaman. Like, yeah, it's just, what the hell? What are you doing here, Aquaman? I don't know. Like, I guess I didn't really that really bothered me a lot. Anyway.
Well, to talk about that issue with the Doom Patrol, I actually like that issue a lot because you get to see like a Doom Patrolized version of the Justice League, which the fanboy me goes, oh, it's the Doom Patrol version of the Justice League.
Yeah,
but with the whole Aquaman thing and like just in the first issue is like, I love Mark Waid's writing, but there are some times where he just beats you over the head with the dead horse. Like, okay, yes. We get it. Aquaman is a fish out of water. He's Aquaman. Oh my God, we get it. And yet we're treated to like three pages of him not fitting in, being the fish out of water.
Yeah.
And I gotta ask, is like, okay, this guy swims to the bottom of the deepest ocean and can move freely down there. Why does he take so long to like pull himself out of the bar sink that this guy is trying to like drown him in?
I think because he enjoyed the fresh breath of air, if you know what I mean. But also, the one of my favorite Aquaman moments is with Martian Manhunter, where Aquaman is reading a children's book, and Martian Manhunter floats down and says, "Learn German first; it's more logical."
I have a question: how does he know English?
He read your mind.
Well, actually, he does have some latent telepathy, but
So Aquaman's been talking telepathically to people up to this point, or like, did he learn English?
I think
telepathically.
I think with this version of Aquaman, the take on it is like he was left on a reef to die because of his blonde hair, which is like some major bad mojo in the Atlantean society. He's rescued by Arthur Curry, sailor that lives in the lighthouse and raises him and teaches him English. And then his dad dies and he goes back into the ocean and, you know, life finds a way.
He's alone.
One of my other favorite scenes is definitely the press conference, the early press conference, because it's crashed by villains, of course. But what I liked about this press conference scene is just how hilarious this sort of side story comes in, where Vicki Vale. And she's not leaving when the supervillains come in and attack, because she wants to stay there to get the story. And Lois Lane refuses to leave too, because if Vicki Vale's here, I'm not leaving. If Vicki Vale's not leaving, I'm not leaving.
And see, I really liked that part too. And I thought, oh my, because like, I guess because I kept getting the vibes that this is about to become jail. I can't believe it's not the Justice League. And so when I was reading this, I was like, oh my God, we're about to start having fun, and then fun didn't happen. Like, I'm really surprised at how dry this really was. Like, the whole thing kind of just was like, let's get to this point in some places, and that kind of got on my nerves, I guess.
Well, it still has some humor. Like, there's a part where the Flash is saying to Black Canary about her high heels.
And the mask.
Yeah.
Which was probably, I've told Ben this before, that was my absolute favorite scene, where it's like, how do you fight in high heels? And she just grabs his golden wingtips on his ears and quarter turn.
Yep.
Although I love how the this news conference they have before the villains burst in, how it just descends into like this Fox News like questioning. It's like, are you advocating nationalism by incorporating America into your name? How does your existence affect the balance of power? Do any of you have ties to the Republican Party? And I was like, what?
Well, it seems like this keeps getting used a lot, like in origin stories, because like this was sort of used in Wonder Woman, and then it was used again in what's it called? Justice League Origin, which, you know, the recent one.
Oh God.
So yeah, they reused it again, and that's why I thought when I saw this, I was really excited because the one, you know, the George Perez run of Wonder Woman had that in there, and it was a really good run. Then, you know, I thought this was going to go Justice League International. We'll just call it that. But it didn't. It just, I don't know. This, I guess I think I'm keep running up against is there are some really good bits in this. Like the conversations between the characters are really good. Like the fact that, well, Green Lantern is the perfect, like, jackass the whole time. Thinking he's the leader and crap like that. And I really enjoy all that.
No, Barry's the leader.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love that when Aquaman's under the water and then, like, Green Lantern almost loses his concentration on the bubble. So it's like, it's great. You have moments like that in this, but then it's like, it feels at times like he's just trying to move things along. And then it just sort of gets boring and you're just sort of, your eyes kind of glaze over and you're like, I wish we could get back to the really fun conversations between the characters, or I wish the villains were like more interesting at times. Well, I don't know.
It depends, because I like really the moments between the characters or with the characters, because like you said, the moments when, with another great moment is when the Green Lantern's talking with Black Canary and he talks about her mother. He says, "Oh yeah, I had such a big crush on her. Like, can I meet her?" And
yeah,
that's part of, you know, Dinah's hang up is everyone's talking about her mother, not her.
There's some great, like I said, there's great bits in here, and they also really, he does a good job of like kind of showing how they're outcasts. But it's almost like he didn't really want to write the actual superhero portion of the comic. Because I guess what I'm trying to say is like when we go to the actual, like the fighting in the background, it's not very interesting. It's just sort of there, and it does, like with the Doom Patrol and them fighting the Brain and how they lose their abilities. Yeah, kind of was like, I don't know about this. This is kind of stupid. Cause I love the Doom Patrol. I just didn't like Doom Patrolling the JLA because it just sort of felt like, oh, why did we do this? Like, because, like, also Black Canary loses her vocal cords, so she's given robotic ones. But wait, so then what's so special about Black Canary? You know, that sort of thing. And I guess I'm just saying, like, I really like the interpersonal stuff. It's just that the origin stories are also kind of, like, very generic and aren't really fleshed out that well. It's just sort of like, oh, well, this is from a previous story that was told a long time ago, and we're just going to rehash it and throw it in here. There we go. It's 1998. These are based on stories that were written like 50 years prior or something like that.
Now, one of the things I liked in this, like with the news conference or news panel issue, is some of not cameos we get. That's the word I was looking for. So you get like plainclothes Wildcat and OG Green Lantern just checking up on the new kids.
Yeah.
You know, then we see like the challengers of the unknown worrying about
love.
You. Oh God. Yeah. Oh, it's like, we might be forgotten or unknown. And it's like, okay, yes, we get it. It's the challenges of the unknown, Mr. Wade. Like, I like that one. But when, like, you talk about some unintended comedy in these comics, the two panel thing with the Blackhawks pays off beautifully later on. Cause you see them watching this news conference. And Blackhawks is like, men, it's time we upgraded. And then later on, you see them with like what Sven has got, like techno armor, and somebody's got like a magic spell book, and they basically look three shades of ridiculous. I mean, it's funny, but I mean, it's the Blackhawks. It's such a pure and simple concept. These guys are basically the challengers of the unknown with planes.
I love the Blackhawks. It's a but you're right. It's this book does feel a little all over the place at times, but at the same time, I think year one really benefits from a sit down reading.
Okay, I'll put it this way. Like, there's some really good they try to get everything in there, and it just sort of feels like, I guess it feels like Tsubasa Chronicles at times. I just thought of that. Because it's sort of like, ha, look at this character that you love in the background. Isn't that great? And it's like, yeah, thanks. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for showing me that. That's great. Also, I got another thing I got irritated with is like, oh, hey, you had to go read another book in order to know what's happening right now. So,
I hate that.
Fuck you. And also another thing is like, I don't know if I'd actually recommend, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't know if I'd actually recommend someone read it. I wouldn't stop them from reading it. But the reason I would say not to recommend it is a lot of this isn't true anymore. Like, a lot of what's in this book is not, like, canon anymore. So if someone read this, they'd be very confused. I mean, it's kind of interesting from a historical standpoint, even though it's, like, written, like, what, like, 13 years later or something like that, after the actual event.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting book, and the art is decent, so I wouldn't stop someone from reading it. But at the same time, if someone wants to get into DC, this is probably not the book.
No, this is not a get into DC book at all. Yeah, this is not it at all. This is a
JLA fanboy book.
This is a book for someone who's interested in the original post-crisis continuity from the 80s to 90s to the early aughts. This is someone who wants to sort of explore that continuity and sort of be sad that it's not here anymore.
Oh, so sort of like a completist sort of, I liked that, so I want a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, they can see that.
Like, there's the one thing I love about this series is, you know, it's this snapshot of a post-crisis Silver Age DC, you know, with all the characters and all that. But there's some that, you know, it's like towards the end of the second issue where, like, Jack Ryder shows up and he's, you know, he's basically the Bill O'Reilly of DC. You know, it's just he shows up, and I don't even think you see the Creeper later on.
You don't.
You don't, and the Creeper is one of my favorite DC characters, because it's the Joker if he was a superhero, basically.
Yeah.
And then you get stuff like, oh, yeah, the guy is, your secret benefactor is got a tech genius. He wants to talk to you about setting up a new headquarters. Here's his card. Oh, look, it's Ted Kord. You know,
the second Blue Beetle.
God fucking damn it.
You know, and then you go from there. I mean, one thing we haven't really mentioned is like the overarching story of this, that
the alien invasion.
Yeah, the alien invaders that the JLA fought in the beginning.
Yeah.
Are like their bodies have been taken by like this secret organization called, I think it was Locus. And they're like experimenting on these cadavers and trying to like find ways to like replicate their powers in other people. And, you know, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
But we've seen this before.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it's like the B story is like, I don't know if you would consider the social stuff the A story and this the B story, but
I would.
Yeah. Because okay.
I think the character interaction and these people becoming the JLA that we will later know is far more important than this alien invasion. This alien invasion is the least important aspect of this story because it's mostly about these people coming together and working together and the character bits. And I think the character bits actually get slowed down by some of these cameos and other things. But even saying that, even though I do love the Doom Patrol, I do, but I have to agree with Kitty Hawk that having all these cameos over and over again does slow down this story and does take away from the character interactions, because the Doom Patrol issues, there's almost a full two issues where there is no character interaction. It's all just the JLA with the Doom Patrol, the JLA fighting the Brain.
Yeah. Yeah,
who's doing what they do every night, Pinky.
And the thing is that like in the okay, so this is fresh on my mind, of course. The George Perez Wonder Woman, there were some like villain stuff going on in the Hades arc, at least that was interesting. And I guess that's why I have a bad overall feeling with year one, is just that since the B story was so weak, it just sort of starts to bring out the problems with the A story, because I'm not enthralled enough into it that I'm like, yay, more. At times I just felt like, oh, I just wish we'd get back to just talking. And I hate to say that, but I wish we could get back to talking. Oh, and another thing is the benefactor thing. Like, they never really actually looked into who the benefactor was, except for once they, like, confronted the dude. And that really irritated me, because wouldn't you want to know who's bankrolling you? Wouldn't that be, like, one of the most important things to think about?
Because, I mean,
and, like,
you go.
No, go ahead, because it really is. It's irritating.
Well, yeah, they never look into that. They just all kind of assume that it's really Simon Carr's, like, oh yeah, we forgot to mention one of the most detestable sidekicks in the history of DC, Snapper Carr, is front and center for, like, I get that they wanted, that Mark Waid is, like, this is a love letter of his to Silver Age DC.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, Snapper Carr exists. But they never make any attempt to look past Simon Carr. And then by the end of it, you find out he's just the middleman anyhow for Ollie Queen. And this, like, he's Ollie, like, Green Arrow's technically been part of the league since the beginning, and he's just been there bankrolling him. Yeah, I'll get in there eventually. And he's just having, like, a great laugh at all this. And there's stuff like, it's never explicitly said why Locus has all these, like, extant characters come into the different heroes' lives, because one of the big reveals in this is, and I think this came out about the same time as Waid wrote the Tower of Babel storyline in JLA.
Mm. Yeah.
Where Ra's al Ghul steals Batman's secret files to take over the Justice League. And then
I love
this
that
is like,
story.
It's great. And they mention in there how Martian Manhunter had all these dedicated files to every hero. And you find he's got it behind like a secret wall in the secret sanctuary in the JLA cave. And then the villain's best in it in one issue, and they jack all these files. And if they did going to do that anyhow, why did they need to have like these, you know, like Paris Jackson is this new detective on the Central City Police Force, and he's working closely with Barry Allen. And there's this guy named Perez who like befriends Aquaman. Hey, here, let me get you a beer. You got any pals on land yet? You know, stuff like that. And then even in like one of the last issues, I think it was either the Dan Garrett Blue Beetle or some, or maybe it was one of the Doom Patrol or something, in the like the big superhero villain brouhaha they have at the end, they mention, yeah, they knew us all. They attacked us all in our secret identities. Where did they get that information? And you basically get this panel of Martian Manhunter glaring at what the hell? But no one ever kind of goes into that before or since. And that was a huge thing. And even if he'd done that in JLA after this, but no, it's basically, it's like, it's here and it's gone.
Yeah.
And then there's the one thing I didn't like, it was how Green Lantern is constantly torturing Aquaman throughout this series.
Oh, God.
Like where they're setting up the secret sanctuary, Aquaman breaks a light bulb. It's like, oh, what the hell, man? And Green Lantern's, you know what would work? A bolt wrench.
Oh, yes.
You know? That's like, oh, and while you're at it, get a bottle of dehydrated water. You know? And even Black Canary's like, oh, God, that's horrible. Funny, but horrible. Yeah. Right before Hal sticks his size 11 in his mouth, he's like, man, I really had a thing for blondes.
No, a thing for your mother.
Well, no, he has that. I guess I really have a thing for blondes. And then she storms away, and he's like, what? What'd I say?
Well, he is a jackass. I mean, Hal is a jackass.
And this, reading this Hal, I don't get the sense of like Emerald Dawn was ever a factor in this in this Green Lantern. You know, like where he, you know, kills somebody drunk driving and stuff like that.
Well,
yeah.
Well, this is before anyone ever thought of a goddamn yellow fear monster.
Yeah.
But really, this is a fascinating book, and I think it's well worth reading all in one sitting, because this isn't really worth doing book book, 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 spread out, because I think you'll find your interest very quickly waning. But all at once, you can sort of go through it quickly and find the bits that you like and sort of absorb it all at once.
Yeah.
But that's how I would recommend reading it.
I would not, like, personally, I wouldn't recommend this to anyone because it's not really current. I mean, if you really are like, I want to be a completist, then yeah, okay, but there are better origin stories. There's better character interactions. This just feels like a slog. It honestly was, like, I didn't feel interested reading this. It just sort of was like, well, let's get this over with. And I hate saying that because, like, I really like Tower of Babel, even though it kind of goes to bullshit at the end. But, and I really like Kingdom Come, and I usually like Mark Waid. It's just, here it's just sort of,
You can see the seeds of greatness, but I mean, there's certain moments in this series, like the, I think it's the third issue I'm looking at here, where they set up the conference table and Flash is made a Superman chair because, well, I think Superman should join the league. And then it's Martian Manhunter. He turns into, like, Mixius Pitalik. He's like, you're being very, very quiet. And, you know, everyone loses. Like, it's a great, you know, breaking the ice thing. Like, there's moments like that that I love. And earlier on in the issue where Flash and Canary are having kind of a moment, and then Green Lantern comes in and she storms off. And Geo and Flash start talking about, you know, how long are we going to be at this? And they have this pile where they're smiling at each other, and Green Lantern says, I predict we're going to live to a ripe old age, which is like foreshadowing what happens to Barry and Hal later on. I mean, there's stuff like that, but it's few and far between, because you go even to, like, say, the next issue where you see Snapper's, like, setting up the security system. We get back to the day in the lives. We get into this whole Locust kidnapping members of the hero community to experiment on them, like with this gene graph ray, which literally teleports body parts onto other people.
And then that, you have the Doom Patrol story.
Which leads into the Doom Patrol story, but it never feels like it should, like, this is going anywhere. Because I mean, this issue ends with the cameo appearance of, like, the Brotherhood. You know, Monsieur Mala and Madame Rouge and the Brain.
And we get brain.
I guess, like, the thing is that a lot of it feels like a trip down memory lane at times. Like, a lot of the interactions even kind of feel like, didn't I read this somewhere else? Like, it's got that feel at times, like, it's supposed to, because it is trying to evoke this, like, feeling of a time. But at the same time, it does sort of, like, have a lot of, I've read this somewhere else.
Yeah, feeling. it's got this comfort food kind of feeling to it as you read, because, you know, it's going back like this.
Yeah.
But it just, it's like a 10 miles of bad road. Like, you get some nice stretches, but eventually you're going to hit the ruts and be bouncing all over the place, which is really, it's,
yeah, and that
just doesn't work.
That's why I would not recommend this, because it's like telling someone, hey, you should drive down I-10 from Louisiana to Alabama, because there's this gorgeous stretch over the Pearl River that's just freaking amazing, but everything else just sucks balls. Like, I'm not going to tell anyone to do that. And
yeah, so like I said, this is a JLA fanboy story. Like, and I'm not knocking Mark Waid when I call him this. Like, he is a fanboy made good. More so than a lot of other guys in the industry. And I can appreciate, you know, the labor love that this is, but unless you're like a hardcore Justice League fan or a hardcore kind of Silver Age fan, it's going to come off as very confusing with how everything goes. Like, you get this nice buildup in the first issue, and then there's just like ping ponging. It's like Ricochet Rabbit all over the place. The next,
don't you remember this? Don't you remember this? Don't you remember this? Don't you remember this? It's like Subasacron.
Stop beating me over the head.
It's Tsubasa Chronicles all over. Well, before Tsubasa Chronicles, so
But I mean, you have the Doom Patrol issue, which is, I think I'd say it's number 6, which honestly I love, because you get the whole thing where Flash becomes Negative Lightning Man or whatever you want to
call it. Which I thought was great. And
you know, that's And I love, for me, I've always been a huge Doom Patrol fan. Like I just love the concept, especially later on when you get to the part where it's revealed that the chief is like engineered
their accidents.
He engineered the accidents because for whatever reason, because the guy's a fucking sociopath. But it's just something. It's like I remember reading this after having read, you know, that the chief did this, and I was like, couldn't he just fix the Justice League? Like, why did he have to, you know, cyborg them up, basically? Because, I mean...
Because that's just what he's good at.
Why are, you know, like, you can ask a lot of questions and you're not going to get any good answers. The answer really is that Mark Waid just likes doing Doom Patrol and he wanted to do it in JLA. That's the answer. And, I mean, that's cool. I mean, we all have that fanboy moment where, you know, like, I want to write Darkhawk, but I want it to be Lady Darkhawk. So, you know, we all have that dream.
And I didn't think anybody still remembered Darkhawk.
I fucking love Darkhawk.
Oh, you and me both, sister. I'm just saying. Yeah. It's just like, really?
Yeah, I love Darkhawk.
Which Darkhawk?
The original. Like, the original run, the 50 issues and one annual.
Okay. The Marvel Darkhawk you're talking about.
Yeah. Which became Dark Cock here in Australia, but that's a long story.
Oh, God, that must take some excellent jokes.
Oh, it was beautiful. But yeah, anyway. Yeah, so this I would say, if you want to.
I mean, like you said, it ends with like this big supervillain battle with the... See, the one thing that I think supremely pissed me off, and this goes back to, like, say, the final issue of Justice League of America prior to, like, the very last issue prior to, like, Flashpoint's ending, where it's Troia and Dick Grayson Batman walking through the Watchtower one final time because they're shutting the Justice League down again for pretty much a bullshit reason. And they reminisce of, like, these great storylines that never happened. Like, and it's just a huge cock tease because they had this one where... They basically get into like this, it's magic versus the Justice League, and they get sucked into the world of like Princess Amethyst, and they gotta fight. I forget what the name is, the dude that had like the Errol Flynn mustache and the blue and purple striped skin, like Dark Opal, I think it was. Mm. So they were gonna fight them, and then they have to team up with Jem, Son of Saturn, to fight this civil war on the red planet of Mars, and there's this one where all the robotic superheroes of the DC universe basically go Skynet and try to wipe out humanity. It's like, those would be great stories. And they do that in one of the issues where the Justice League is fighting like the Invisible Destroyer, or they fight a war against Gorilla Grodd and his army, or they get turned into like, you know, evil photo negatives of themselves and all that. It's like, why would you do that? And then it's just like, why? And then they bring in they use that basically to get to the part in the story where they're fighting the Weapon Master from the future. Was it Zotar? I think it was his name. It was Zotar the Weapon Master, which is an established idea that this is where Superman gets involved with the Justice League somewhat. You know, he hasn't fully come on, and then he flies off. Oh, see you guys later. There's so little focus in these last few issues leading up to Locus using their gene graft array to create like these super soldiers of the dead aliens and everything. And it just ends like nothing. It feels like nothing really happened. Like, sure, you have this huge epic battle, but by the end of it, it just doesn't feel like nothing really happened. Like, it's another DC crossover comic.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you really don't get a sense of the world was taken over, because it just goes through so quickly with it that it doesn't really let you like catch your breath and feel like, oh my goodness, the world was taken over. And I think that's part of one of these stories that takes place in the past, is they really can't get that oomph of oh my goodness, everything's dire, everything's gone to shit, because it, like, you know, it doesn't give you a chance to breathe. And that part of the story always felt a little disingenuous to me, that part of it is, you know, it's really hard to convey the world was taken over in like five pages. And
yeah.
And it's, you know, part of it is a 12 issue miniseries, and the other part of it is there were definitely better ways of conveying that all the heroes have fallen and the world was taken over than what they did. But I don't know how much of it is the fault of the format of the story itself and of the writing itself. And I don't know where to place all the blame, so I'm not going to.
Well, one thing I would like to ask, if I ever met Mark Waid, I would like to ask him about this. There's this scene in the 8th issue of the series where one of these guys who I think it's I can't remember which character is exactly. It's one of the Locust agents that was, you know, getting buddy-buddy with the heroes. And he basically breaks off his engagement with his fiance, and he goes to say goodbye to his special needs brother who's, like, in a mental hospital.
Yeah.
He's basically saying, like, I'm never going to come back. And I cared more about seeing this guy, like, the brother, you know, Stevie, like, is his name. Mm-hmm. Like, how he breaks down and he's bawling his eyes out. And, like, mm-hmm. there's never any real motivation besides the fact that this guy feels guilty for his part. Like, and it just, I know, just that scene just did, what the hell are you trying to accomplish here? Like, I just found that really confusing.
He was trying to set up that this was, like, for real serious. You know, he's going to see his mentally ill brother for the last time. And I kind of thought that was kind of bullshit, too. Because I'm like, where did this come from?
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, basically, he doesn't even, and again, it just, like you said, we've seen stuff like this before. Because he breaks it off with his wife. He says goodbye to his only family. He goes to tell the Justice League and laser through the chest.
I know. And it's so it feels so lazy because I'm just thinking the whole time, like, I understand why he threw in as much about the guy's life right before he died. It's to quickly establish this character so we kind of feel something for this guy. But I'm so sorry. It feels like, okay, for one thing, I guess, like, when he goes to the mental facility and says goodbye to his brother, I'm like, okay, one, that's not going to happen. Like, that's not realistic at all. Like, this is – it was to just establish this character very quickly. And because of that, it felt really forced. Because I was like, what the hell is going on when that happened? It's like, where'd all this come from?
Well, yeah, because it's basically – they have this – this cliched setup of he's saying goodbye to his life because he's probably not going to come back. And basically, it's just set up to reveal that Simon Carr is possessed by an unknown 8th alien out of the original 7.
Well, and then that could have been handled in so many ways. Like, you know, the guy's like, hey, man, this is something screwy or something like that. Like, it could have been handled so many different ways. This is just sort of like, this is the, hey, let's have an emotional moment kind of thing. And I don't like that. That's kind of cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it goes from there into the, you know, the alien or the faux alien invasion turns into a real alien invasion. And it just.
And then the maximum security prison for all the superheroes
is Black Hawk Island.
I know. I like it because it's really Silver Age-y, but at the same time, I'm like, God damn it. Also, yeah, I wish I could have seen that happen. That would have been great.
Yeah, I love that. It's like watching an episode of The Adam West Batman. They're just all in the yard with guards and watchtowers.
Yeah, that was a bit ridiculous. I mean, it's like Stalag 13, but, you know, it's... like I said, it just felt very disingenuous, that final part of the story. If it kept more with the characterization and interactions and the stories and got rid of the whole invade or heavily tweaked the invasion story, you would have a stronger book. It would definitely be stronger because the thing is, the invasion thing sort of tried to play itself as a mystery, became semi-forgotten, and then started itself along, climaxed, blew its load too early, and got cleaned up way too quickly. It feels disingenuous, and I'm sorry to say it. But other than that, like I said, I read this, and I enjoyed the character moments, and I would recommend it for the character moments. But the invasion storyline does fall flat.
Yeah.
These stories suck.
The story, yeah, not the greatest. But Barry Kitson's art, like, this is one of the first times I read anything that he had done. And he's one of those artists that I think his strongest work comes from working on team books. Because, I mean, later on, he went and did the short-lived series The Order that came out, like, post-Civil War in Marvel with, like, California's designated superhero team. You know, originally they're going to be the champions, but then they got a cease and desist from Hercules and the Black Widow. And stuff like that. Like, I love his art. And I mean, him and Wade reteamed years later where they did the If It's Too Loud, I call it If It's Too Loud, You're Too Old Legion comic, where it's the year 3001 and the Legion exists, but all the parents view it as like they're like this subversive element and they're corrupting the youth of the universe. And
they're the Beatles.
Yeah.
But but yeah, it's... Yeah, like I said, I would recommend this to someone who wants to know more about the post-crisis universe, but for a casual reader, JLA year one's not a pickup. But ultimately, other things I would like to say is I do love Mark Waid's work. His Impulse run is very enjoyable to me. And we will be covering that eventually.
Yay!
One of my favorite issues of the Impulse run was the one dealing with domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. It's actually a very good series. I enjoyed it, and it did kind of help that I lived in Alabama at the time that this was being published. So that was kind of special.
Yeah. Well, to me, what was very important about the Impulse storyline about domestic violence was it was the mother. That was and not many people want to talk about that. And there was Mark Waid saying, yes, this does happen. And yes, it does.
I mean, I do like that about Mark Waid, that he brings up like things like domestic violence, mental illness, you know, thing and disability. And I think it's part of it is that he did live in Alabama, and it's pretty frickin' in your face in Alabama.
Yeah.
Like how horrible it is. I mean,
beaches are nice. Beaches are nice.
They're covered in oil now. Okay. Yeah.
I know, but like you talked about how a lot of the story is like cliche, like we've seen stuff like this before. And that's not to say that stuff like that isn't good. Like one of my favorite runs on Flash is like what Mark Waid did. Because I think he wrote that for, what, almost 10 years? Something like that?
Mark Waid was one of the longest-running Flash writers, and he actually... Mm. There are things he tried, and there are things where editorial slapped him down, and back when editorial made smart decisions, like Mark Waid almost changed Wally West's Flash costume to something that was quite horrendous.
Unrecognizable.
Yeah. And DC's like, nope, give him the red again.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because like they had control back then. It wasn't Rockstar land back then.
Well, they gave, you know, half a shit. But I mean, like one of the things he did in his Flash run that I liked that was cliched is he did it twice. He did the evil Barry Allen. Like he had the original, like the return of Barry Allen where they reintroduced, you know, Professor Zoom, who did like the con man thing with just reading the memoir of Iris Allen and just using that to bluff his way into the lives of Jay Garrick and Wally West. And then later on towards the end, when I think Paul Pelche, is it Pelche or Pelche? Is that the right pronunciation?
Yes.
Yeah. He was working on the title doing the artist, and he created the villain of Cobalt Blue, who was like the actual evil twin brother of Barry Allen. The evil twin brother is one of my favorite cliches in comics, and that was one of the ones I thought they did right, because, you know, it built, and eventually you have the reveal of who it is, and you still get that dun 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 effect, and, you know, and that's great, but it's versus what, you know, happened in year one, it's just kind of scattershot, so.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, it's the best thing you can say about Mark Waid's writing in this is that he at least had that passion.
Yeah, he definitely.
Oh dear God!
Flash. Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking at the alternative Wally West costume, folks, and it's
that's the one that Mark Waid wanted to push. Say this is Wally West's new costume. This is what the Flash is always going to look like from now on. Editorial stepped down, said no.
Yeah, because I'm sorry, yellow is then established in that universe as evil, so no.
Yeah, I mean, they used it in like...
Actually, that costume is entirely created by the Speed Force.
Well, and also the hair exposed, which of course, you know, got carried into Impulse, which I'm okay with in Impulse, but that's a pretty bad Flash costume.
It was the 90s.
I know, the 90s was full of stupid, and that's when I most... Flash. Oh god. Because I read the Flash run, and I read... Because I really liked Impulse, so I went back and read the Mark Waid's Flash run, and it was pretty okay. The 90s, I have to say, like, it was right before things just went to shit, so things were still okay.
Well, what do you think of Walter West?
See, I like that costume. Don't get me wrong. I like that costume with like the dark, you know, crimson red with the silver lightning bolt and all that. It was a decent update, but yeah,
But yeah. What do you think of the whole? You know, it's Dark Flash. You know, Walter West, the Dark Flash.
It's the beginning of the aughts, which was just full of dark, grim, dark crying, which I guess is still going on.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, you look at it, and every JLA member had like a dark replacement character for.
I know. At least you know that's better than what it is now, where. Now the official Superman is a scary psychopath space alien Jesus. So I guess this is better.
Here's a movie for you, psycho.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I did watch Justice League War recently, and they changed it so that like psychopathic space Jesus is Superman, and they kill people. I mean, I was just watching it going, okay, I guess we're okay with the superheroes killing people now. I was always okay with that, but that does sort of change things.
What are you gonna do?
It's just sort of like they're acting as though they're like super noble and shit, but at the same time they're just killing people. And Wonder Woman steals ice cream, which is funny. That is a funny little bit, but it was just still like
much.
Yeah, I still.
I don't know, but like talking about just with like the Flash thing there, it's like with the Walter West Flash, it was basically DC's, like they had the Kingdom, which was like the lame sequel to Kingdom Come. And basically the finale of the Dark Flash storyline was just their way of getting Hyper Time back in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, DC is like, no, we must have the multiverse again. Fine, we'll have Hyper Time. It's alternate timelines. It works. And just, what are you going to do?
DC is just lost. I'd just say DC's just lost its way because it doesn't know what to do. You can see it in the movies. You can see in the animation. You can see in the comics. They have absolutely no idea what they're doing anymore. And it's just because... there's just too many like people from up high, like the movie division, the animation division, telling them what to do. And it just gets all crazy. And it's also the rock star attitude thing that's been going on recently, which is, you know, like you were saying, like they stopped that horrible yellow abomination from being the Flash's costume. I don't think a lot of that's happening anymore. Anyway.
Not really, no.
Yeah, it's sad. And that's the thing. Like, I guess, like, as much as I did not enjoy, like, year one had some good bits, and I'd say it was kind of good in that way. But reading it, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, compared to recent books, I'm just sort of like, wow, that actually had a coherent storyline. Yeah. As coherent as it gets, you know. But they had a more coherent storyline than anything I think I've read recently. Like, watching Justice League War, it was like disjointed as all hell.
I know, and I don't want to talk about that until later. But let's.
I understand. Yes.
Let's.
we have to go into it eventually.
Yeah, but this is our wrap up. I think basically, like I said, if you want to learn more about post-crisis continuity, and learn more about, you know, what the heroes were like in the 80s, 90s, and aughts, early aughts, check this book out. This is yours, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
And Kitty Hawk of Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki. Transgender magical girl meets Norse gods. SGVY.com. It's sexy fun.
And we are saying goodnight.
So Adios. Long.